So, agenda paper 5, IES 38, and I'm handing over to Nicolette.
Yes, thank you, Sue. Agenda paper 5 discusses how a customer accounts for software as a service cloud computing arrangements. The request asked about the accounting for fees paid or payable to access the supplier's application software running on the supplier's cloud infrastructure. This committee discussed this matter at its September meeting, and that discussion highlighted the need for improvements to the wording of the proposed tentative agenda decision. Having considered the committee's September discussion, we re-looked at the applicable requirements, and our analysis, which begins in paragraph 11, considers three questions. The first question, discussed in paragraphs 16 to 23 of the paper, is whether the customer receives a software asset at contract commencement. We considered the definition of a lease in IFRS 16 and an intangible asset in IS 38. If the customer in a software as a service arrangement has only the right to receive access to the supplier's software in future, we think it does not have a software asset at contract commencement. The second question, discussed in paragraphs 24 to 44, is whether the customer applies IFRS 16 or IS 38 when it receives the right to use the supplier's application software. And we concluded that the customer applies IS 38 and would recognize an intangible asset for the right to use the software, subject to the recognition criteria. The third question, discussed in paragraphs 45 to 49, considers how a customer measures any asset recognized as an intangible asset applying IS 38. I would like to draw your attention to question 1 on page 13 and ask if you agree with our analysis of the requirements in IFRS standards.
So I agree with the staff analysis and with the way the tentative agenda decision is currently worded. We might discuss later on some amendments that I would qualify them as minor amendments. And I think it's a great job you've done because based on the discussions we had last September, I was curious whether you might be in a position to achieve the writing of a tentative agenda decision, which you did, and I think it's very how do you say that, analytical, in the sense that you ask questions, you answer them on a step by step basis, and we can effectively follow you, and it answers specifically the question asked in the submission. So for me, it's good.
Bruce.
Thanks. I feel I just want to echo the same comment I made, not that it's going to make a difference around this whole concept of right to download, in that I'm still concerned that the right to download to me doesn't give you anything. It's around the licensing around that there's still my concern. Other than that, I think, based on the discussions we'd had, whether I agreed with everyone or not, this reflects the outcomes of the discussion. I think it's definitely more articulate compared to what we had last time. So, yeah, I would support it.
Young Su?
Before I make any comment, I have to ask a question. Does the staff think that the right to access the software is always a service contract? Is that what you conclude in the agenda paper?
I think that's right. If we're saying the only rights the customer gets is rights to future access to the supplier's software hosted on the supplier's infrastructure.
That is what I'm a little bit uncomfortable about. What I thought about was some kind of example like a private clouding system, so that the customer has a private clouding system. So the private clouding system is operated by the operator, updated by the operator, and so forth and so on. But in the private system, the customer can get the benefit out of it, and also restrict the access of the other people. So in that case, I think the customer has a control onto that private clouding system. And the other example that I thought of was the the private, I mean, the membership of the private golf club, golf course. So in that case, the golf course is managed by the management of the golf course. But, you know, the members of that golf course can have the benefit by accessing to the golf course, as well as restrict the access of the other people. So when I thought about some examples like that, I just wonder whether the right to access or something over the clouding system is always a service contract. So that is the, you know, the a kind of question I have. So the more example I think about this one, you know, the more I'm confused. So I'm comfortable with the right onto the software itself. I mean, I think that is very clear. And also you talked about the software lease and the control over the software itself. I'm comfortable with it. But when I go back to the right to access the software, I'm confused.
So the one thing I'd say maybe, Yongso, is in the first example you talked about, that you talk about private cloud or something, then to me that's a different set of facts you're talking about than the rights to access that has been described both in the submission and therefore in the agenda decision. I'm not saying that means we'd conclude a different answer, but at least it already is a different set of facts. And I suppose what we'd hope is that then in looking at whatever that contract is and working through it, if you equally put that contract through this sort of set of questions, you'd work out the answer in a sense. But it's all right. The starting point in any of this is to fully, you know, look very, very closely at the contract to see what rights the customer actually has.
So that we are not talking about private cloud system, but more like general cloud system where everybody can access to that by the authority of the provider.
That's certainly the basic fact. But if there was a situation where there is some private cloud, then again, look very closely at the contract, at what rights the customer has, and ask yourself the same questions. Do you think the customer has any ability to direct the use of any software there, etc.?
Mary, do you want to respond specifically?
I just wanted to come in with another clarification that I think we've set aside, but it's helpful to know that it's set aside, which is in a situation that's a straight right of access, and it's your golf club that made me think of this.
Yes.
To the extent that you're paying in advance for, let's say, a year's access to something, we're not talking about the question of do you or don't you have a prepaid asset the same way you might if you paid your insurance at the beginning of the year for a year. That's just off to the side. So I'd say when you're reading through this, think of it being on a pay-as-you-go, and then if it's not pay-as-you-go, there's a separate, do you have a payable for access you've already received, or do you have a prepaid for something in advance? And I'm just pointing that out because that's out of the mix of things that's being analyzed here.
Andrew?
Like others, I like the revised tentative agenda decision and way to think about it. One thing that made me pause as I went through was that there's, I think, mention of example 9B from IFRS 16. 9A and 9C talk about something which is a little bit more bespoke or something more under the control of the customer, so maybe something to Young So's point. And I think that what this analysis is really getting at is something where it's generic software that people are accessing, not something that's been designed by the customer and the supplier has gone away and built and put up in the cloud for them to run as and when they want to. And so maybe on the third line of the first paragraph, which we said in exchange for right to access the supplier's generic application software for a specified term, that would put it into the right compartment.
Tony?
Probably similar to others, I thought the staff did a good job. I think this addresses the issues that we talked about previously, and I think it clarifies a couple of things that we spent quite a long time talking about at the last meeting. And I agree, I think, with what Petrina said. I don't think the answer would necessarily be different if it was the sole access to the software, because the key is the rights to direct the use of the software, and you might still get to the same answer. In the same way that having a golf club membership doesn't necessarily give you the right to direct the use of the golf club. What it gives you is the right to use the facilities. And with that in mind, and to Andrew's point, I wonder if there is any merit when we get to the agenda decision in just clarifying that what we are looking at, because I wasn't sure it came through entirely to me, is that we're looking at the rights to direct the use of the software, not a license to that software. We're looking at the right to direct the use of the software. In the same way, if you use the golf club example, it's the right to use the golf club is not the same as the right to direct the use of the golf club.
Okay. Mikhail, are you on the phone? Want to come in? Reinhardt?
So I think similar to what others said, I think the analysis certainly is helpful in terms of more straightforward software arrangements in the cloud. What I found a little bit confusing was when we got to the agenda decision, the fact that we say that the arrangement would be accounted for under IS 38, and when we look at the control criteria in IS 38, we make reference to IFRS 16. And so what I was wondering about is, perhaps similar to what Tony was saying, is whether we should clarify that what we're focused on is in an arrangement where you've got essentially multiple elements to it. You've got a right to access software, and I use that in a sort of a colloquial term, accessing the software, as well as the hosting service. It's asset that you might recognize under 38 is where you have the ability to control that software and restrict others' access to it. So it's, I think it was, as I say, more clarifying the control elements in IS 38 to the specific aspects of the arrangement that would be within the scope of IS 38, such as having access to the software.
Guy?
I'm similar to others. Agree with the staff's analysis. I think the staff did a really good job on putting together the agenda decision. Couple of observations, though, about it. One is, in describing how to determine whether you, in the first question of the agenda decision, whether you have an asset, a lease, or a service, we don't talk about any application or analogy to IFRS 15. We talk about it in the paper, but we, in the agenda decision, we don't get to it until we get to the second question about whether I apply 16 or 38 if it's not a service. And that's that last paragraph on page 17. I think it might be helpful to have that more up front, talk about, because I think that's helpful in determining the fee 58 to 62 of IFRS 15, helpful in determining if you've got it as a service or it's a lease. With respect to then looking at whether it's a lease and even whether it's an asset, you point out some four examples of when would be indication of control, deciding how and when to update or reconfigure the software. Absolutely agree with that. Deciding how the software can be used and by whom. I'm not sure I'm in total agreement with that, because I think I can decide who uses a service. And that doesn't necessarily give me control of software. But the most important decision in my mind, an important example to build into here, would be deciding on what hardware the software resides. I think that really is shows control.
Thank you. Guy?
I'm interested in the thought around the discussion in the agenda decision when we were talking about a right of access and applying the IS 38 definition of control. We explain in the right of access that it doesn't give the customer the power to obtain the future economic benefits flowing from the software itself. I think software itself in that context, we're using that as the underlying resource in the phraseology in IS 38. But then in the discussion of right of use, the right of use arrangement, where we use that same IS 38 definition, we say power to obtain the future economic benefits flowing from the right of use, rather than the underlying software in that context. And so I continue to sort of pause on that and, you know, how we're applying the definition in IS 38. And on the surface, there seems a bit of an inconsistency there in what we're thinking of as underlying resource. And I know we had a brief discussion yesterday about this, but I've been reflecting on it, and I'm still struggling with that inconsistency in the tentative agenda decision. I don't know if someone can help me wrap my head around why in one case we're focusing on the software and in the other case we're focusing on the right.
So let me try and explain. I'm not hopeful I'll explain it in a clear way, but you can try and follow me. So the use of the word, so what you're referring to is in paragraph 13 of IS 38, I would acknowledge written many moons ago, but when it was written, so what it says is an entity controls an asset if the entity has the power to obtain the future economic benefits flowing from the underlying resource and to restrict the access of others. And while we work out on what we even, you know, said last time, if you move on then to the next sentence there, it talks about the capacity of the entity to control the future economic benefits from an intangible asset, etc. And so what we concluded, which I think is correct, is when paragraph 13 refers to the underlying resource, it's effectively referring to what you would recognise as the intangible asset, assuming you controlled it and you met the recognition criteria. So underlying resource becomes whatever you would recognise as the asset, assuming you meet the criteria. So when we talk in our paper and agenda decision about where you have a software intangible asset, we would say if it is a software intangible asset, then it means you're saying you have the power to obtain the future economic benefits flowing from the software itself, which is why in that part of the agenda decision we talk about the software itself. If in contrast, however, though, that it's a software lease, then a software lease means you've got the right to use the software, so the actual asset you would recognise in that case would be the right of use. So if it was an I-4-6, you'd recognise a right of use for land or a right of use for a piece of equipment. Even this would be in 38, but if you're recognising an intangible asset when it's a software lease, the underlying resource in paragraph 13 is the right of use. And in that scenario, you're saying you have the power to obtain the future economic benefits flowing from the right of use. So it looks maybe like, but it's simply saying that wording underlying resource is referring to what you would end up recognising as the intangible asset.
Yeah, so I guess I'm still pausing on that because it doesn't necessarily explain in my mind why the right of access itself is not an intangible the way we've phrased it. And I would have thought, you know, don't we have to speak to why a right of access doesn't meet that definition? And I agree we don't have a software intangible in that case, but is the right of access an intangible asset? And I don't think it is, but I would have thought we need to respond to that question. Why isn't the right, you know, right of access qualifying intangible? And I would have thought if we
phrased that in the context of the underlying resource being the right of access, it still strikes me that we don't have the power to obtain the future economic benefits from a right of access, because those future economic benefits in a right of access scenario are dependent on the actions or decisions of the supplier, not solely the customer. And so I you know, again, it just seems there's a bit of a gap in the thought process in the agenda decision in articulating why the right of access itself isn't a qualifying intangible. We're explaining why the underlying software isn't, and I agree with that, but we haven't articulated why the right of access itself isn't. Again, I don't think it is, but there, if we define the underlying resource as the right of access, I still think we could say we don't have the power to obtain the future economic benefits, because those economic benefits are dependent on the actions of the supplier.
I think we might be able to bring out more that what there is with this access is a right to receive access in future. So it's something that hasn't yet been delivered. And that's an important difference, and that helps to explain, I think, what we can do. So maybe we can bring that out a little bit more. It's not just access versus use. It's something that has been delivered versus something that has not yet been delivered. You've prepaid for something you will receive in future.
So actually you don't have the power over anything yet because you haven't got it yet. You'll only get it.
Effectively executory.
Yes.
Assuming it's on paper.
So, yeah, I think that would probably work as well, but it's still sort of absent to me as to why we haven't articulated why the right of access itself is not an intangible. We've said why we don't have an underlying software intangible, but we don't say why the right of access is not an intangible.
Mary, you want to come in?
I'm wondering, and I really sincerely am wondering, I'm not sure about this, whether in some ways the questions Guy is asking is related to a lack of clarity about whether the analysis is being done, if I use software as my example, with respect to the underlying code, you know, the IP versus, and I'm about to show my age and lack of technological capacity, the copy that I have, whether I'll at least be as modern as to say the copy I downloaded as opposed to having to go out and get a CD-ROM of it. And at what times are you talking about analyzing something in respect of the copy? I control this copy, or I control the fact that I bought a one-year license to Microsoft Office 365 for my home computer versus, you know, analyzing it. Have I gained control of all of Microsoft Access, you know, Microsoft 365? So, you know, code versus underline. Sorry, copy versus underline.
Okay, so with that.
I don't know, so it may or may not be that.
We're trying to tiptoe a little bit. So. Do you want to add anything, or shall I ask the committee whether they're happy to vote on question two? Any other responses? No? Okay. Good. All right, so question two. Sorry, Goro.
Yeah, actually, unlike that the other members, I had a quite hard time to follow that the agenda, that tentative agenda decision, that it is step by step, but still there are lots of, you know, that elements of jet elements, interrelated elements, and the judgment involved, so that the if, you know, that the, could we have that the agenda decision, could we have some kind of, you know, the flowchart type thing as an appendix to the, this type of agenda decisions? That the, yeah, you know, that the, this might be the, my, you know, that the English reading ability, or that the, the lack of, you know, that the technical stuff, but the, if we could have some kind of flow chart, that would help me help that the, you know, help that the, you know, the stakeholders understand the this agenda decision.
I think I suppose I'd say, I mean, interested in whether other thinks that's needed. We almost, in a sense, Guru, I think, tried to set out the tentative agenda decision almost in that way by, you know, first of all, asking, you know, the first question you ask yourself is, do you get a software asset or just is it a service, almost like a flow chart? And then once you've answered that, the next question is, which standard am I in? So I suppose in a sense, we kind of thought the idea was in there, but
actually, that I understand that the, you know, you are responding to that our discussion in September, and that, you know, we requested you to put more, you know, explanation and the definition and the examples, and all these are in that the main text of the agenda decision, so that the from that the non-English speaking people like me, that it has become rather you know, difficult to follow the flow of logic.
Okay, thank you. Bob?
One more question on the staff's analysis. We focused a lot on questions 1 and 2. We haven't really focused a lot on question 3, and maybe because we think it's just so obvious. But the question 3 is, if you're in 38, how do you measure this? And 38 says measured at cost. And we say that the very first sentence in the agenda decision. But then the staff's analysis, paragraph 54, goes through, well, what if there's variable payments? What if there's options? And I agree, you know, we don't have answers to that. So I'm wondering if in the agenda decision, we just say the first sentence, that you measure that cost and drop all the rest of the discussion, because it's not peculiar, it's not unique to this issue. We get this all the time on other types of intangible assets.
All right, so with that discussion, can we turn to the questions? So on page 14, question 2. So firstly, does the committee agree with the staff's recommendation not to add this to the standard setting agenda?
That is everyone, I think. Yes.
Okay, so Bertrand, did you have something you wanted to raise on the wording of the tentative agenda in addition to what you mentioned before?
As I said, it's more minor aspects, but maybe just on page 15, when you, in the first paragraph where you're discussing a software lease, and you refer to paragraphs 9 and B9 of IFRS 16, you say explain that a contract conveys the right to use an asset. I think it would be, if you effectively refer to those paragraphs, maybe states the definition within, which is conveys the right to control the use of an asset. Maybe it was explicit there, but it might be elsewhere in the tentative agenda decision. Just so, and then on page 17, last paragraph, there I wouldn't have referred to IFRS 16 any longer. I think IFRS 15 first is sufficient. Then you're no longer in IFRS 16 when you're there, and so referring back to IFRS 16 is appeared to be quite confusing for some, at least in my jurisdiction. And maybe you're referring to paragraphs B58 and B52 of IFRS 15. Fine, I totally agree with that. Maybe we could also refer to the provisions relating to separate performance obligations in IFRS 15 might be also approved there. It's not absolutely to be done, but it could add something also. But for sure, I wouldn't refer to IFRS 16.
Okay. Bonnie?
Just a minor point, but I wonder if you want to expand the reference to paragraph B31 of IFRS 16. It has a flow chart. On the assessment of whether a contract is or contains a lease, and I think that might also be helpful.
Anything else that you've heard that you would think we should be doing to the agenda decision based on the comments received?
So what I heard, and at least I like, so Bob, you had a suggestion on an example, which I think was, you know, that an important, as a for example, an example of sort of important decision making might be when you can decide on sort of which hardware, which infrastructure the software will run. So I think we could potentially add that as an example. Tony, I heard you say if there was maybe a way we could draw out more that when you're assessing ability to direct the use, you are focusing on the underlying software, because that's the same whether it's a lease or... And so I think, I don't know what we do with that yet, but I think we take it away and think about whether there's a way to draw that out more. Bob raised the question of whether on page 18, that paragraph that begins paragraph 24 of IS 38, whether we want to keep all of that detail that refers into IS 8. I suppose we put it in there because we thought there was something helpful there, but the committee may decide that they think it's not and just keep the first sentence.
Carl?
In this paragraph, if you keep it, I would restore the deleted part of the previous agenda decision, the previous draft, which was referring to the 2015 agenda consultation. I think it's helpful to keep in mind that there's an ongoing work on variable payments. There was a nice reference to that in the draft agenda decision, and it was cut. I don't know why.
I could explain why, but we could. I suppose the reason we actually took it out is we suddenly realised that in... It's funny now, when we sometimes go back and look at some agenda decisions, say that were written in 2012, and inserted in that is commentary on something that was happening at that time in terms of the board's wider agenda. When you look at it 6 years later, it's kind of like, why is that in there? Even though at the time it seemed like a really good thing to say. So I suppose we now try to make our agenda decisions, you know, more have longevity. Yeah. Future-proofing it in a sense so it lasts. I think if we thought a comment like that was important, we could put it in update but not make it part of of the agenda decision.
Young Su?
I think it's better to delete at least some remarks about the variable payments. You know, the variable payments, we don't give any guidance onto the variable payments. So if we just leave that in the agenda decision, that might cause some unnecessary attention from the readers. So I just suggest to delete all the phrases from, for example, to the contract for that phrase. Any remarks on the variable payments?
So are you agreeing with Bob? So yes, you'd leave it at just an observation that it's required to be measured initially at cost? All right, so should I call a vote with that?
Yeah. We're going to try and pick up Guy's comment as well.
So I should have commented on that. I didn't mean to ignore it. So I think we can, what I can say is we can try. The reason I am nervous, let me try and explain my cautious try, is that I think last time in September, the reason we ended up understandably getting in quite a twist trying to work through the words is almost because of what you're pointing out, Guy, because we were talking about the right of, we kept referring to it as the right of access, and how is that different from, so it made it sound like, and because an intangible asset can clearly be a right, it made it sound like an intangible asset, and then how there seemed to be no basis for us concluding that it's not an intangible asset, we think it's just a service contract. So my caution on that is that And don't get me wrong, I think we can look to see if there's something maybe along the lines of what Joan said we could add to make it clearer. But I'm hoping that the words we've got in here that talks about the fact that, you know, what that right means is you're receiving access in the future, meaning you don't have anything today to have the power over. I think there may be something we can do then to say you don't have anything sort of today at the start to have power over. So we'll try to do that. But I'm definitely sort of nervous about sort of talking about the right of access.
If you can do something neat that doesn't get too complicated, we'll try to help. Okay, so could I get a show of hands for the tentative agenda decision, on the basis that we take on board the comments that Petrina's already made and that we adjust the second to last, the penultimate paragraph on page 18 and reduce it to just the observation that it's required to be measured initially at cost without going on to talk about the variable payments in IAS 8. Can I get a show of hands for the tentative agenda decision on that basis, please?
That is everyone.
Great, thank you.
May I raise an additional question?
Sure.
In commenting this, either in France or elsewhere, with other groups of preparers, I was quite surprised by the comments I received then, which were, whatever the industry, it was mostly media, telecommunications, and banks, but it was more general than that. They all said, actually, IAS 38 is a tool standard to provide an accurate answer today for cloud computing arrangements, for bitcoins, for whatever. So for new issues, let's put it that way. Okay. So they were asking whether the ISB could do something in effectively accelerating maybe on its agenda the fact to renew IAS 38. I was very surprised by those comments. I wouldn't have thought that would be the outcome of the discussions I had with those various groups, but effectively it was always the same, saying could the board took as a priority the revision of or the amendment of IAS 38 as being something important to come up with. Yes. So I just wanted to...
All right. Okay. We'll note that down and let the board know.
I don't know if it's shared by others.
At an appropriate
others,
point.
But,
okay. Yeah, thank you.
Agreed.
Okay. So, thank you. IAS 38. So, unfortunately, for personal reasons, Vincent can't be with us today, but we are ably assisted in his absence by Javid, representing the lack of exchangeability issue. Series 8. So, the objective today is really to get some input, isn't it, for further development of our thinking on what we do in the circumstances where we've now told people not blindly just to use the exchange rate. What do you do instead? Javid, with that,
yep.
And over to you.